And welcome to another edition of The Passionate Friar here on CKCU. Today I'm joined by SM Carrier.
Hi.
Who is an author, artist, and martial arts enthusiast living in Ottawa. And we're going to be talking about issues of representations of people whose identities you don't share. It's a very complicated sort of introduction, but basically think of it as a, you know, straight old white guy writing about women in a book and how it often goes horribly wrong.
Yes.
Raised in various countries around the globe and currently living in Ottawa, always drawn to epic tales of heroes and villains, and somehow you managed to both read and write avidly.
Yeah. I think you need to read in order to write.
Yes, yes. Well, and I've actually heard people who, you know, who say they write, but they're not necessarily huge readers. So I don't know.
Really?
I guess they live in their own heads.
I guess. Well, yeah, I guess.
In addition to your writing, you're also, again, you're an artist, mm-hmm. and you also do, you run a YouTube channel as well.
Oh, yeah. My Silver Stag Studio YouTube channel, which was weirdly nominated for an Aurora this year.
Ah, well, congratulations.
Well, thank you. I don't know how, but...
Well, you're doing stuff. There's a differentiator. Having actually administered the Auroras one year, so.
Oh yeah. Oh wow.
I know. You know how stuff gets in there, and it is because people have seen something that you've done, and that not other people are not doing it.
Oh, so. I guess. I suspect I just have really good friends.
That's also how things get in there. So the reason why I invited you in today, and you agreed, thank you very much, is that a little while ago you wrote a blog post, and you maintain a website, smcarrier.com.
That's correct.
.com, right?
Yeah, .com.
All right. The post was entitled Dimensionality, and it was talking about... There's a certain amount of frustration evident in the post, and it was really about, especially supporting characters, how people just turn to sort of one-dimensional cutouts just to fill the pages or to push the story along, and that not only is it... You use the word lazy.
It is, in my opinion, quite lazy writing.
And it is also reinforcing those kinds of stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And so you called out to other writers to say, you know, put some effort into this, do some research, talk to people.
Yeah.
And really what this show is going to be about is, again, exploring how someone can conceptualize somebody else who doesn't necessarily live the same life or lifestyle that they do. You know, from my perspective, I was in women and gender studies, and being able to understand issues that are relevant to women or the gender spectrum, across the gender spectrum, also across class and race and ability, as in disability spectrum, was a real challenge. And to do it respectfully, to do it in a way that isn't appropriating, takes a lot of effort.
It does. It really does.
Laziness is easy.
Yeah.
This is hard. I want to just start by talking about maybe some of the negative things that you've seen around. We've kind of, you know, broadly gone over them. You know, you mentioned in particular LGBTQA+ type characters being written about by cis men, for instance.
Yeah, and they often don't get it quite right. They fall back on sort of weird stereotypes that aren't necessarily true. I mean, all stereotypes sort of have a foot in reality, but no one LGBTQA+ person is the same as another. You have gay men who are for Trump, gay men who are not for Trump. There are gay men who have had really supportive families when they came out, and some people who haven't. There are gay people who are flamboyant and effeminate on both sides, like gay and lesbian, and then you have, you know, the harder gay and lesbian people. They're not all the same. So to make all of them the same kind of person, which is what I find in a lot of fiction, like throughout fiction, portrayals of gay and lesbian people are sort of all the same. Like all the lesbians are dykes, and all the gay men are incredibly effeminate. And that's not always the case. And I just, if that's what you're going to write, I guess, if that's the actual genuine character you're trying to write, I guess it's just, I'm so sick of seeing only that, because it's not truth.
And is it, again, you say it's across genres, presumably. Mm-hmm. For me, it tends to be, well, I guess in genre writing, it would seem to be that a lot of people really try and focus on pushing their story forward, and they just kind of throw characters at it as needed to move the plot, so...
Yeah, really, the plot should happen because of what your characters do. And your characters shouldn't do things because it's convenient to the plot, is, I guess, the way I would suggest you consider writing.
Well, the punchline to the blog post is because everything hinges on your characters.
Yeah.
I've heard about people who write where they kind of create the characters, and then they throw them into a situation, and the writing actually just comes out of that. The story was not developed.
That's actually a lot... That's quite similar to how I write. Usually what happens is the character sort of formulates in my head, and then that character's story, the ending of that story, I have those two before I sit down to write. But anything in between, that's up for the writing process. That so happens while it's being written.
So it's character interaction that drives it.
Yeah, exactly that, yeah. And I think if you have a really good story but your characters are lackluster, it's a difficult read. You do need good characters in order for your readership to connect with what's going on in the story. At least for me personally as a reader, I need good characters, or I just want to just shut the book and I'll go for something else. There are too many books to read to waste it on characters that I can't get with.
I'm currently grinding my way through a book by a very famous science fiction author, Kim Stanley Robinson. His characters drive me insane.
Oh, really? But is it because they're just awful people, or is it because his characters are just poorly constructed?
Poorly constructed.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. So, it's very, you know, huge ideas. He wrote the Mars trilogy, which is an epic tour de force in terms of speculative fiction writing.
And I should read it.
That's fine. You'd struggle.
No, probably.
You'd want to stab a lot of these characters before they got to the end of the book. This particular one is particularly egregious, and you know, the story elements are being driven by stereotypes. And
see, that's so frustrating.
Yeah, they move on to the next part because, you know, they lost their love, and so they're going to become terrorists. It's awful. So, and another couple of books that I read, I'm actually going to name names here. I'm not shy. Daniel Suarez, he wrote a couple of books. One of them was called Demon, and the other one called Freedom. And I read both of them. I took a course a couple of summers ago on augmented reality. I guess I was just augmented reality and futurism, and I think was the name of the course, and it focused on that. So I read the books for it as part of this course. The technology and sort of the futurism aspect of it was actually quite fascinating, and the characters were so painful. In this particular case, the author was once upon a time a software developer, and all the characters, there's so many characters in it that are sort of like the stereotypical alpha male hacker. We had a little discussion before we came on, and you had a particular comment.
Oh, about how I hate the word alpha?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, because, okay, so this has to do more with PUA culture, like pickup artist culture, where they tout this idea of what an alpha is, and anybody who has studied anthropology knows that the idea that they're touting, they're actually just saying, hey, act like this really beta primate, and you'll get everything you want. But alpha males don't need to go screaming about how good they are. They know. The people around them know. An alpha male is the quiet guy who walks into a room and everybody stands up straighter. That's the alpha. The betas are the ones screaming, hey, look at me, hey, I'm so tough, look at me, look at me. It's just, I hate alpha so much. It's so dumb.
So the characters, especially one of the main characters in this, well, there's a cop. Mm-hmm. And then there's a hacker.
Okay, so is the cop like the stereotypical?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And the hacker's also sort of like this stereotypical fantasy, you know, techno, you know, like they can do everything through technology kind of hacker. They control the world and people respect them because they fear them. And
oh, no, fear and respect are not the same things.
Well, this is, of course, what the trope is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I find it very frustrating when... If they had have had complex characters, the book would have been a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
As it was worth reading for the technology. It was not worth reading for the story or the characters. The personal stuff was just abysmal.
Yeah, oh, that's a shame.
But it's common.
Yes, it is.
So this is what we're talking about. Yeah. I guess one of the things I did want to also maybe talk a little bit about is you know, on one hand, we should probably mention, so you said anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
And you should talk a little bit about anthropology, because I've heard you talk about anthropology before.
Well, I studied prehistoric anthropology in university and archaeology. I focused mainly on, like, the Iron Age, Bronze and Iron Age of the Atlantic facade. So basically what we would call Celtic culture. I could go on for hours about how that's not quite accurate, but anyway. So anthropology is really, really useful as a tool for writers, I should think, because it also covers, I mean, I study prehistoric anthropology, but you have modern day anthropology where you can read all sorts of ethnographies, although if you're reading earlier ethnographies, take it with a grain of salt, because there's a definite bias in the writing. And it really does help you to get an idea of how different people act and why. And it's just, humanity is fascinating if you take the time to sit down and study it. That's all.
Through the anthropologist lens, yeah. And yeah. Again, I have heard you give, I've seen you on panel discussions and mm-hmm. stuff before where you did come at it from an anthropological standpoint.
Yeah.
Talking about cultures and again, especially when you're in sort of a science fiction fantasy kind of realm, mm-hmm. It's critical to be able to understand how that sort of stuff works.
Yeah, and I think using the academic perspective helps a lot to strip away your biases and your preconceived notions about what a culture is and what people of that culture might do and be and act and behave, because you're supposed to at least come at it with a scientific mind. And so, you know, all of the other stuff, like the pop culture and the stereotypes that were built in that culture, are supposed to not be part of the equation when you look at these cultures. And it's useful as a tool to getting rid of your biases in your own writing.
I guess what I was wondering is, I've talked specifically about some very bad examples of writing and characters. And do you have any examples of when it's done right?
Everybody I know is going to roll their eyes the minute I say this, but Steven Erikson. I'm a huge fangirl of Steven Erikson, not least of all because his characters are so incredibly complex. In his first book of the Malazan Book of the Fallen series, Gardens of the Moon, there's a particular character that I started off hating. And by the end of the book, I just wanted to give the poor guy a hug. Like, the way he crafts his characters, they're complex and they're not always good, but they always have a good reason to do what it is they're doing, even if I might roll my eyes at the reason and say, oh, really? But I can see from where they're coming from and I might not agree with it, but it's still something I can at least empathize with a little bit. Even the villains are really good.
I mean, if you flesh it, again, it gives you something, and that's what makes a good story as well, mm-hmm. is that even if, you know, you're not that character, you can at least understand their motivations, and there's,
exactly,
you know,
that.
Geez, if I was in that situation, what would I do?
Yeah, yeah, and it's a story that talks about gods quite a bit, but these gods are quite human, so even, like, the evil ones, you're like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
I know, do you find Canadians do better at character development than...
That's a really good question. I generally don't look at the nationality of the authors
okay.
I'm reading.
All right.
I only found out that Steven Erikson was Canadian a couple of years ago when I first picked up the book.
Which
I just thought he was a
yeah.
brilliant writer. Yeah.
So I was fishing there, but because one of the things that I'm always trying to explore is, you know, what makes a Canadian writer a Canadian writer.
Oh, yeah.
Other than just the fact that they're Canadian.
Yeah, I think that's it, honestly. It's just that they're Canadian.
All right. And, you know, I guess, is there any other... you know, books that stand out maybe even not necessarily books or specific writers, but I mean, what sort of techniques, because you talked about a couple there in terms of, like, the motivations and...
Yeah, one of my favorite things that I've come across, this wasn't in a book so much as it was once in a computer game and also in one of the Star Trek movies, where they have gay characters and it's not a big deal. It's just a part of their character. It's not their defining feature. And I love that, because gay people can be really brave. They can also be really cowardly. They're people, and their sexuality is just sort of an aspect of themselves. It's not the whole thing. And a lot of writers tend to make it the whole thing. That's their one dimension, is that they're gay. And that's just... So in one of the Star Trek movies, when Sulu came out of the ship and he picked up his daughter and kissed his husband, and I was just like, oh my god, that's beautiful. But it was just that one short moment. They didn't dwell on it. It was just that. And they also did it in really well in The Last of Us. It's a computer game title by Naughty Dog.
Actually, I just saw the intro, first little bit of it for the first time last weekend.
Oh, really? Oh, it's such a good game.
If you'll excuse the phrase, what a kick in the junk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That first, I cried. Oh, my goodness. I live streamed it, and I cried on the live stream the first little bit. But one of the characters that they come across, Bill, he's gay. They don't make a big deal of it. You only really find out about it at the end of their scene together when Ellie stole one of his dirty magazines, and it's just full of pictures of naked men.
Yeah.
You know? But he was a recluse. He was grumpy. He wasn't effeminate. He just happened to be gay. And they handled that so beautifully. That would be, like, two of the big ones that have outside of the writing, but still within genre, that did it right.
Okay. Yeah, I have a book lined up. I just finished my physics degree as well. So,
oh, good Lord.
I haven't had a lot of time
lately. No, right?
So I have a very large queue of books that I'm trying to work my way through. Yours, actually. Your first book, The Dying God and Other Stories, is
a collection of short stories.
Is in there as well. So my apologies that I did not have a chance to read it before now, but I'm just finally starting to be able to do things. But one of the things that ended up on my queue was a book called A Closed and Common Orbit by Becky Chambers. And this one I read about, I read a number of blogs, and this particular one was by a woman who actually works on the Cassini probe.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, very cool. And she said that it actually had one of the most believable and human portrayals of non-gender binary characters that she's ever
fantastic.
Read.
Oh, fantastic. So, I need to pick up that book.
All right, I'll send you a link.
Yes, please.
So I'm looking forward to it again, especially after Suarez and Robinson books that I'm reading right now. Like, I really need someone to do this properly.
Yeah.
The pain. You know, when you're talking about writing as well, so, you know, both from the positive and negative standpoints, I mean, there's two ways of kind of approaching it as well. One of them is, well, I guess it's that people are just being lazy, and I can throw this trope in, I can move my story forward, I don't have to try.
Yeah.
And the other is they really believe that.
Yeah, they might do.
People of, you know, other races or other classes or other genders are really that simple and facile.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it makes your world easier if you don't believe in nuance, but it's actually quite heartbreaking. And it has a lot to do with, like, there's a lot of problem in media with the way people are portrayed. Like, for example, the black community is often portrayed as thugs. You don't hear about the all-women's black chess team that won the championship. They don't talk about that. They talk about, you know, the kid who is robbing people at knife point. And you see a huge difference in the way that black and white people are portrayed in media. When the floods happened, white people were getting supplies in order to live. And all the headlines relating to black people doing the exact same thing was they were looting. It was exactly the same, but it's portrayed differently. So when you're constantly surrounded by that, it is really difficult to break free of everything the world has been telling you your whole life. But you really need to do it. So I have absolutely no doubt that people who sometimes might write women as these weird alien other people genuinely believe that women are weird alien other people instead of actually really very similar gender. I can't remember the name of the study or the authors, but they did a study about differences between genders, and they discovered that you are more likely to have differences between individuals than there are differences between genders. So men and women, we both come from Earth.
Yeah. Last I checked.
Yeah, last I checked. None of this men from Mars, women from Venus rubbish. We both came from Earth. Most of us want the same things. Just, you know, treat these other characters like they're people. Imagine yourself in their situation. What would you do? What would you do if you didn't have access to education? What would you do if the only way out that you could see of a life of poverty is to get involved in crime? Because then at least you'll be able to put food on your mother's table. What would you do?
Walk a mile. Exactly.
Yeah.
Again, I think that's one of the things that makes for good fiction, is when you can explore. Of course, I'm a huge science fiction fan, huge fantasy fan as well. And one of the things that we'll call it speculative literature.
Yeah.
Which is kind of I could go on for hours on that, so I'll just stop there. But the notion that this these genres allow us to actually explore what it means to be human, what it means to be who we are, and what would happen if we were other.
Yeah, exactly that. Part of what I love about this genre, and what I think a lot of people don't understand about this genre, is that the experience itself in this book is incredibly human. It's getting to the core of what it is to be human, and you can do that equally in fantasy and science fiction. In science fiction, it tends to do it through conversations with the future or with technology. In fantasy, it might be quite a bit more obtuse than that, not quite so obvious, but it's still there. It's a safe space in order to explore these things. So explore them. Like, get in there and really feel it out. Do your research, because I also want to say that readers are getting more sophisticated. Like, they're no longer just satisfied with the same old formulaic pop, like, speculative fiction genre stuff that's out there. They want something deeper. They're looking for that experience. So I think as writers, it's up to us to provide it. And that means doing your research. Talk to the people that you're going to be writing about. Sit with them and listen to their stories and actually listen. Don't come in there with, oh, you're this, and then try and cram their stories to fit that. That's not the way it works. Just listen to what they're saying and listen to their experiences. And if you have the opportunity, try and live that experience a little bit. See what it's like. Try and live on $2 a day.
So we've been talking about, you know, the crappy way of doing characters, and then the hard way of doing characters, which is actually perhaps the good way of doing characters. Now, some people might be able to write effortlessly.
Yeah, for some people it's intuitive.
But eventually you're going to run across characters that aren't going to come, aren't going to be intuitive to you. You can avoid them, not have to worry about the complexities that come with it, I guess. Or you can delve in and discover something about the characters.
Yeah, make it an exercise in understanding humanity.
Yeah.
What usually helps too is, they used to just be called beta readers, but I guess now they're called sensitivity readers. Before you go through for your final edits on your manuscript or what have you, give your manuscript to somebody who is of that persuasion. So I wrote a military science fiction called Skylark, and it has a gay character in it. She's this kick-ass space marine, and she's gay, and I have a gay friend, so I gave her the manuscript. I'm like, could you read this over and make sure that everything rings true? And she came back to me and she said, well, we wouldn't really use the word blouse, but everything else seems okay.
That's fairly minor.
Yeah, I know, right? Yes. I got something right. So yeah, get a couple of sensitivity readers. It's really important. They'll be able to point out to you without, you know, criticizing everything about you, I guess, where you went wrong, where it's not quite accurate, or where it falls into potentially offensive stereotypes or situations. So
it sounds fairly gentle in a lot of ways, because you're asking them to look at a particular portrayal, as opposed to, hey, how great is my story,
and
giving them a red pen.
Yeah, you should never do that with beta readers anyway. The whole point of beta readers is for them to pick apart your book and say, this works, this doesn't. And then you can choose to ignore them if you want, or, you know, take their stuff to heart.
Because I haven't really heard about beta readers before.
Oh, really?
I have not. And I've only heard, I guess the only phrase I've actually heard from writers locally as well is, one person uses particular phrases. They had a red pencil brigade that they gave their stories and stories in progress to.
Yeah? Okay, so that sounds like beta readers, yeah. Like, my mom and dad are both really good at picking out all the errors in my punctuation or my grammar or plot lines that don't quite match up. But I have other beta readers who are really good at examining character. Sometimes you'll come across I'm a beta reader for a couple of other people as well. Sometimes you come across in writing, a character does something which is great for the story, or it sounds wonderful, like, in the writing, but it's not their voice. It's not the character's voice.
Okay.
And you have to say, this character has been talking slang the whole way, and then suddenly they're in Shakespearean prose. You might want to fix that. So beta readers also look into that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Wait, yes, exactly. They're talking in slang, and then all of a sudden now they have this expose on explaining all of the background stuff.
Yeah,
and then they're back to slang. Okay.
Yeah. they have a stroke? What happened here?
The author didn't want to just put it in a paragraph. They wanted someone saying it.
But there's ways to do exposition through dialogue. That's fine. But keep the voices true to the character.
Yeah, and if you don't have anyone who can do that exposition, maybe you need another character for your story. So I guess maybe talk a little bit about, you know, the how you develop characters.
Oh, this is going to sound so ridiculous, but I tend not to. It's almost as if the ghost of a character appeared to me and goes, hey, this is who I am and this is how I died. And then it's my job to sort of walk through the story of exactly how it got to that point.
Okay.
That's essentially it.
All right. And do you go back and, should have asked you this before you came on, but do you go back and critically, you know, examine the portrayals of these characters after they've hit the page?
Generally, I don't start writing until everything's sort of fully fleshed out in my head. So no, I rely on my beta readers for that.
Okay.
I find it so difficult to critique my own work. I'm too close to it, I think. So yeah. I need the distance and another eye.
I guess I was just kind of coming at it from the perspective of, you know, writing about someone that whose lived experience is not, you know, you don't share kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is almost all, I mean, it's all characters.
It's pretty much all characters in fiction. I have never fought the embodiment of darkness.
Okay. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Considering your hobbies.
I might not lose. There is some hope for me.
One of the things that, you know, again, you can put on your anthropologist hat on this as well, I guess. And one, you know, we talked about it earlier again, is one of the concerns that, you know, how you write might reflect how you think about other people in real life. If they see stereotypical portrayals of themselves, that hurts. That gets under their skin.
It does.
You know, even if they're saying, oh, yeah, you know, it's just water off my back, it has an impact.
It certainly does. From personal experience, growing up a woman, there were a lot of things that I really wanted to do that I didn't do sooner because I was always informed that women don't behave that way. I would have started, I think, my martial arts training well before my 24th year if I had thought that that was something that women can do. Playing with swords, not encouraged for girls, but I love it. You know? So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that really internalize projections of what you should be, and that comes from what you see portrayed. So if you always see women portrayed as sort of soft and nurturing and sort of weak, it leaves you feeling like you don't quite belong there or anywhere, and you're isolated and alone. And it wasn't until I was much older that I realized women can do this stuff too. And not every woman wants to be married, and not every woman wants to be a mother. There's a whole bunch of different kinds of women out there. We're not one monolith.
And you're saying you were looking at a website recently that was bringing to life light the stories of a lot of women who had
Rejected princesses. They've published a book, and I think they've got a Kickstarter for a second book, and they run a Tumblr where they put in entries for women throughout history who don't behave the way you think that women throughout history would have behaved. There's everything in there. There's pirates. There's I forget her name, but she was in Russia's best sniper at the Great War. There was a whole body of African warrior women who were their own army and were one of the most feared armies of the region, you know. A whole bunch of different stuff. There was an asexual actress / fencer whose claim to fame, she said, I believe, that she could steal any woman from any man. Yeah, it was. This book is amazing. Like, the website is amazing. And you find out all the stuff about women who don't make the history books, but who should, because they've shaped history in exactly the same way as the men in history books have. They were there. They helped shape history. Things wouldn't be the same if these women hadn't acted.
So if you're a man trying to write about women, this might be a good book to pick up.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of different women in there.
So Rejected Princesses.
Rejected Princesses. Okay. I love the Tumblr so much.
You have written a number of books, and maybe we'll talk about you a little bit now.
Oh, okay.
We can do this. The Dying God and Other Stories, a collection of short stories. Mm-hmm. Ethan...
Ethan Cadfile.
Cadfile. The Battle Prince Human, which is a Shadow Empires book. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's about vampires. I hated the writing of that book because it was about vampires. I'm just so done with vampires. But it's actually a pretty good book, if I do say so myself.
So is it in someone else's world or...
No, it's in this world. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sort of reminiscent, I guess, of Vampire the Masquerade.
Okay.
Kind of style.
Daughters of Britain?
Yeah, that's my most recent one. That is a historical fiction set shortly after the Boudiccan Revolt in 61 AD. For those who don't know Boudicca.
Please.
Boudicca was a British queen who had some awful stuff done to her and her daughters by Rome. And she led a revolt against them and very nearly succeeded, but her army was ultimately crushed during the Battle of Watling Street, I believe it's called. And she died. But there's no mention of what happened to her two daughters, so I wrote the story about those two girls.
Thus Daughters of Britain.
Daughters of Britain.
The Seraphime Saga?
Yes.
Is two books, is it?
It's two books, yeah. It wasn't long enough to fit into three books, and I didn't want to try and force extra words out. So it's just a two-book series, and that's following a young chieftain's daughter from the tundra, whose people are almost entirely wiped out by slavers coming in from the desert. And so with the help of the god of death, she rallies an army to fight back.
Talk about writing about the other.
Yeah.
Two, or I guess one, but and second one coming, your very own adventure books.
These are fun.
Now, what does that mean, your very own adventure books?
So every week I write about 1,000 words, and at the end of that 1,000 words, I offer three options, and my readers vote on which one they want.
So it's not necessarily the reader that's making the choices, it's a community choice.
Yeah, it's a democratic choice, which doesn't always work out. My readers have a knack of killing themselves. the option with the most votes starts off the next 1,000 words.
Actually, one of the things that I thought was interesting about it is that the proceeds from your first book, Skyroad Walker, go to the Ottawa Caring and Sharing Exchange.
That's correct. I didn't think I could... I didn't feel right making money off something that everybody had a hand in writing, so I decided to give the proceeds to charity.
Okay, and what does the Ottawa Caring and Sharing Exchange do?
Oh, they're this really fantastic organization that ensures that people have enough food on their plate around Christmas time.
Okay.
They make sure that Christmases are special for families in need, and also they help with school supplies, etc., for families that can't.
That can be extremely traumatic, not to have those sorts of things that you are expected.
Can.
I mean, there's a very strong societal pressure to be able to deliver on those times.
Yeah, and so they help, and I think that's an amazing thing that they do, so I decided to give them some money. Not much, because I don't sell many of the books, but that's okay.
Do you have one publisher or multiple publishers?
Most of them are self-published, but Daughters of Britain was published by Renaissance Press.
Renaissance Press. And where are they based?
They're in Gatineau, but here in Ottawa.
Okay, all right. Actually, they're interesting in the sense that they publish a lot of, I guess, gender non-conforming fiction.
Yeah, well, Caro, I beg your pardon, Caro, they, right pronoun, is gender non-binary themselves, so... They have a particular interest in making sure those voices get heard. So they've published queer writers. They've published a disabled writer who wrote a really funny science fiction comedy. They're very diverse and inclusive in who and what they publish, which speaks to me.
Yeah, on my shelf right now, they did a card game called Extra Humans. And
That's based on the book series by Caro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have not had a chance to again, I told you my story
you've been
as to
a little
why
busy.
I've been busy.
Yeah.
But again, that's one of the things that I plan to dust those off and get that game going this summer. Geez, we have about 5 minutes left, I guess.
Ooh.
Before we go on, I guess, is, any other comments, I guess, on representations and thinking about, I think one of the things for me as well is that when you take in diverse sources of information, it gives you a better appreciation for diversity. And again, you may not want to go in that direction yourself, but it gives you better appreciation for people that are doing the things that they're doing.
Yeah, it makes you realize, too, just how incredibly wonderful humanity is in its diversity. I mean, birds would be boring if they were all one color. Humanity is the same way. Both in, I'm not just talking about skin color here, by the way, just, the diversity of human experience is fascinating and it's beautiful and it ought to be celebrated and respected. And, taking the time to write a character that you might not necessarily be yourself is part of respecting humanity, all of humanity. No, that's it.
I guess we'll wrap up. I don't know. We'll see where this goes. But on your Twitter account. So speaking of diversity and different, shall we say, people are all different. Everyone has a story on your because you only have very few characters to actually do a bio on Twitter.
Yeah, that's correct.
Partially, it says Knight of the Pen, martial artist, will shoot arrows from horseback. In costume. Now, I thought that was hyperbole.
No.
Then, of course, I saw the pictures of you shooting arrows from horseback.
In costume. Yeah.
Again, there's stories here, but maybe talk a little bit about martial arts first, I guess, because this is a martial art as well, obviously.
Yeah, equestrian martial arts. It's a European martial art, and it's my favorite of the European martial arts. I haven't had a chance to go out and ride in a couple of years. I'm sorry, Chris, who is my trainer. I haven't had the time or the funds, actually, let's be honest.
Often it's the funds for me. Yeah. It's, there's a pursuit that I do that has been unfunded the past couple of years. I'm hoping to start up again.
But there is nothing more fun, to me at least, than to drop reins, draw a bow, and hit a target at a gallop. It's so much fun, and I really love it. I also do Chinese martial arts, Northern Mantis Kung Fu, and Chinese kickboxing, or Sanshu. And that's been a huge part of my life and helped me a lot, actually, come out of my shell. There are a group of people I train with at Wuteng, Canada.
I'm just thinking because of the fantasy genre that you work in.
Yeah, it tends to inform my characters a lot. They tend to be fighters, mostly. At least my female leads tend to be people willing to pick up a sword. There's such a diverse group of people there, too. Oh, and I suppose it helps with battles. Like if you're writing if you're writing a fight scene, it helps
really
to know.
Sad fight scenes.
It helps to know what you're doing if you're going to write a fight scene. That's for sure.
Yeah,
I'm hoping at a CanCon actually we can do a demonstration for writers. That would be fun.
CanCon, just for those of you who don't know, is the Conference on Canadian Content in Speculative Arts and Literature. It's CanCon. And if you go to can-con.org, you can find out more about it. But it's an annual event that happens here in Ottawa. Because at the time that it started, there were a lot of events in science fiction, fantasy, that kind of stuff, horror. But they tended to be very TV and movie focused, and they tended to also be very southward looking. They would look to the United States, sometimes to the UK, Doctor Who and that sort of stuff. There really wasn't a lot about the book in Canada, so it was started up to explore that aspect. And
I'm very glad it did. I love CanCon so much.
So what's interesting is that since it started up, a lot of the major conventions and stuff around Canada now actually feature Canadian authors, whereas before there were no Canadian authors at Canadian science fiction conventions.
Oh, that's so depressing. There are so many really good Canadian authors.
Exactly. And in fact, what's happening, of course, is that when Canadians see themselves up on stage or whatever and say, hey, this is a Canadian author, maybe I could be a Canadian author. And again, this is what we're talking about, is when you see positive representations.
Yeah, representation matters, guys. Not sure if you knew, but it does.
So yes. Yeah, that's it. You need to see yourself. So CanCon was started for that. It's not as unique now as it used to be, but it happens every year, generally in the fall.
Yeah, usually around October. I think this year it's October 13th, that weekend.
Okay.
I might be wrong, Derek. I'm really sorry.
Well, it's not your responsibility. You know what I can do? I can go to the website. There you go. I'm going to go to the website and we'll tell you. It is October 13 to 15. 2017.
I got it right. I'm no longer sorry, Derek.
At the Sheridan Hotel in Ottawa. So if these are topics that you're interested in, definitely look it up, can-con.org. And one of the things that I really like about it as well is that it's not just, it's not just reading and writing and arithmetic. No, there's actually some arithmetic panels as well, physics and science.
Yeah, they have some really good academia panels.
I mean, one of the things that I always liked about it is that it's, it has these serious topics, but almost everything is presented in a really fun way, and there's all kinds of fun stuff going on, and things like live martial arts demonstrations and live fighting with swords and shields demonstrations, and there's discussions about how to conceptualize these things. There's a lot of discussion about gender and race and culture and ability disability type stuff, and all of these things are gone into, which, again, I find fascinating. So it's a great event.
It is. It's a fantastic event. Everybody should come.
So this is, again, where one of the places that I heard you as well is you had your anthropology hat on. and
my opinions.
you have one or two that I have run across. Opinions, that is.
My father raised an opinionated girl.
Which is good. Opinion. Well, you know, you're getting stuff done.
Well, that too. I also get myself into a lot of trouble. So, right.
So you have a Twitter account?
I do, at SM Carrière.
And a website?
smcarrière.com.
See how this works?
Yeah, and this is really easy.
You can go to cksu.com, select programs, The Passionate Friar, click on today's date, and you can get her name, and a link to her website is on the page there as well. I've been listening to The Passionate Friar, and I've been talking to SM Carrière.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for coming in.